February 18th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Help us celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the Confessional Radio Show with Contessa de la Luna. We have performances by Contessa de la Luna herself, Remy Fasolatido, Mike Crenshaw, and many more. We have plenty of audience participation, including human shadow puppet theater, animal impersonation contests, and prizes. And don't miss our David Bowie Kazoo tribute. All that and more, Thursday, February 11th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Tickets are $10 for an entire night of music, mayhem, laughs, and surprises. All proceeds benefit KBOO Community Radio. Tickets available now in advance at brownpapertickets.com or at the door. Join us Thursday, February 11th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. See you there.
Just a quick news update from the KBOO newsroom. The last of the occupiers at the Malheur Refuge has surrendered. David Fry surrendered to the FBI just before 11 a.m.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the comics and animation show. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm joined today by a Portland duo who have made their mark in all kinds of media, including graphic novels, music videos, independent films, and velvet paintings. The Panda Brothers have a new comics project underway, and they're here in the studio to give us a preview. Arnold and Jakob Pander, welcome back to KBOO.
Thank you so much.
Great to be here.
I think the last time that you were here, my esteemed colleague, Joseph Gallivan, was talking to you about your gallery show at the Mark Woolley Gallery.
That's right, yeah.
And, photographic and painted works on velvet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a couple
of... It's like a year and a half ago, maybe?
Yeah, yeah,
Mark Woolley.
Yeah, that was cool. That was fun. We did a, that was all kind of LA centric. We were kind of doing a lot of trips to LA, and so there was kind of a celebrity and urban decay theme.
Yeah, and you seem to be sort of trading off. I noticed that your feature film Selfless has been making the rounds. That's been something that we talked about on KBOO, and that's been actually getting some good reviews.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically we did Selfless, which was our motion picture, our feature film, and then that sort of ran its course in the kind of indie festival circuit, and then we got a distribution deal. We were on Time Warner and
did like a national cable
VOD. Yeah, what I noticed.
And then we made a short film in 2000, basically 2013-14, that was called Subtext, and that was a kind of experiment in communications, sort of modern relationships.
It's basically about the perils of navigating a relationship through texting. So the whole story was told
lots of text. Instant messaging going on.
So
tell us about the new project here. It's called The Dissident, and it's an interactive comic action adventure. And you had, let's set this up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Back in the 90s, some people may recall that you had this political thriller graphic novel set in Amsterdam, series of comics that became a graphic novel through Dark Horse. It was called Triple X. And so you're sort of you're mining that same material for The Dissident.
And yes, literally. It is the same material. Essentially, Triple X was the working title for what was ultimately meant to be The Dissident. And we basically, you know, lived in Amsterdam and wrote and, you know, drew the entire, this 336 epic called, that would ultimately be called Triple X, ultimately not be totally fulfilled as the vision that we had you know, really spent 5 years creating. And it was designed to be essentially a really rich European tale, sort of in the spirit of Tintin, but with a more contemporary edge, and in full color. And much of the reason it took so long to create the book was just the enormous amount of detail, sort of the landscape of Holland, the sort of old world, but set in this sort of speculative future where our primary character Hans is a dissident who's run away from political persecution in New York, and he goes to try to hide out in Amsterdam, only to find that, you know, there's really no escape from injustice in the world. And because he's a curious soul and a journalist, he finds himself sort of wrapped up in their sort of political strife and turmoil and chaos. And really, it's about losing your fear. It's about having to kind of face the injustices in front of you and, you know, deal with them head on. And in his way, it's really about, it's a really a pen versus the sword type of conflict. And Hans has to sort of find his way to make a difference and, resurrects this, excuse me, the silenced newspaper, that the sort of mythic paper, underground paper called Triple X. And that's really where the working title came from at the time. So, but ultimately it's a story about a dissident, and it is the same story, but we actually have some added story elements that we're going to bring into it, into this remastered version as well.
Yeah, before people get the wrong idea about mm-hmm. the title, Triple X does not refer to anything erotic, the red light district of Amsterdam or anything like that. Talk about how XXX is a historical artifact.
Yeah, it's basically it's the coat of arms of the city of Amsterdam. And so, you know, when you're in Amsterdam, everywhere you turn, you see it's really three crosses, and you see it on the shield of the city. Every city and town in the Netherlands has their various shields, but that's the one that's very prominent in Amsterdam. And so we thought, oh well, that's very bold. And at the time, we were kind of like, oh well, there is a double entendre there, because Amsterdam is known for this as a kind of a sin city in a sense, but it's also got a very strong political streak. There was, you know, a major resistance movement during World War II. Underground newspapers. Our grandfather actually illustrated the cover of one of the underground resistance papers during the Battle of the Bulge, getting information out to the
Famously,
Dutch people.
Famously, the Anne Frank Museum is still there.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's a lot of layers to that in terms of just something being illicit or illegal, and that could be
rebellious,
you know, a thought, an idea. So it was such a prominent visual feature in the city that we thought, well, yeah, that'd be a really cool kind of bold and like a title that would grab you. At the same time, we were going, you know, let's create a title that really relates to a character, because I think there's something, you know, Triple X is a very abstract concept, and if you don't live in Amsterdam, you know, the connotation is really radically different.
It's pretty subtle.
So we ultimately, you know, originally pitched the project as The Dissident, and so it was really rooted in a character story, and that's really what the story is. It's about a young guy who's really disaffected, overwhelmed by the circumstances of the world, ultimately trying to run away, you know, from not necessarily responsibility, but just try to kind of escape the horror, and then ultimately realize that, you know, no matter where you go, there you are, and you can't escape, you know, injustice by traveling across the world. It's a global issue, and you got to kind of face it wherever you are.
Now, you mentioned your grandfather, who was a really well-celebrated artist, did some Bible illustrations, as I recall, at some point. And your dad also, Henk Pander, has some paintings in the Portland Art Museum, among other things. And your mom, Marcia Lynch, here, Portlander originally, but you were both born in Amsterdam, and originally the idea was to stay in Amsterdam. Amsterdam seems to me, there's maybe a little bit of analog between our two cities, because there's this sort of tension between the libertarianism. We have this sort of Western libertarianism in Oregon, and also kind of this this socialist kind of groove, this egalitarian groove. And there's a lot of that going on as well in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think right now we're facing obviously in Portland, a rent crisis that everyone's really feeling, and it's, you know, having an impact on the, you know, the nature of the community, and certainly artists are having a hard time surviving, and so you're starting to see changes in the city and kind of growing pains. At the time we were living in Amsterdam, the whole squatter movement was a really mm-hmm. big deal, because the same kind of thing, that same kind of crisis was taking place at that point in Amsterdam. So we were kind of finding ourselves, kind of thrown into this kind of their local politics that were a lot more militant at the time. I mean, people were like, young people and artists and musicians were squatting these buildings that were, essentially abandoned in different parts of the city. And then, you know, literally riot police were coming in and evicting them. So it was pretty dramatic. And then there was other squats that were right in the center of the city where they had kind of found some kind of agreement with the city. But they still had this kind of rebellious edge, and they'd even have like a makeshift bar where you'd literally kind of come up to the doorway. One in particular called Frankreich, which was literally behind the palace in the center of Amsterdam, and you'd come up to their door, this big metal door, and you'd knock on it, and like out of a movie, you know, there's a little grating, a little sliding grate, and like they'd look at you.
The political speakeasy.
Kind of a political speakeasy. There was no code word, but the code was like, okay, what do you look like? Are you one of us, or are you a tourist or whatever? So we kind of, you know, I guess we had a, you know, we looked enough the, you know, we were in our early 20s and we were wearing leather jackets probably, so they let us in, but we kind of blended in a little bit and just kind of hung out and observed this very exotic, sort of somewhat militant but really more post-punk sensibility that was really connected to this squatting issue. And we really absorbed that world, and a lot of that came into the pages of at the time XXX, and so part of that too was just kind of capturing that world and that feel of a kind of this sort of disenfranchised youth of that era. But we see it now still. It'll be interesting to see how things kind of unfold in the next few years here in Portland.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and we're talking today with Jakob and Arnold Pander. The newest project from the Pander brothers is an interactive comics adventure called The Dissident. So Amsterdam, and you spent time there in the late 80s, early 90s, before coming back to Portland and pitching XXX mm-hmm. to Dark Horse Comics. This is not just the villain, so to speak, or the presence in the book is not just the government itself, but also corporate media, international finance. It's sort of the yeah. overarching. Since you've come out with XXX, which is now a full scale graphic novel, there's been so much that's gone forward in the surveillance state. And so this must play in a little bit to your Dissident. Tell us about the interactive aspect as well. How would readers interact with this comic?
Well, there's a couple things. One, what's interesting is when we actually came up with the original premise of this, although it was dealing with surveillance and counterculture and operating outside of the mainstream with new ideas and trying to get information out and get the truth out, it was also done really before smartphones, really before the internet as we know it had really taken full hold. So as we were drawing this project and writing it, that technology was really not drawn or written into the piece. It was really kind of like a classic traditional analog universe in many ways that the story is unfolding in. And it's really got the huge newspaper conglomerate, the global conglomerate called World Today, that won't listen to this story that our young journalist has brought to them, and then his effort to uncover this old mythic outlawed political paper to finally get the truth out.
Yeah, the premise is that the media's been sort of outlawed, or any media form, so which really is why there wouldn't be any smartphones and there wouldn't be any smart devices.
And we're actually working right now on writing a prequel that sets up that world and kind of sets up the context so that we get an understanding of why these people are really living offline and in a sense opting out of digital technology, so that they can operate undetected to a large degree in what they're doing. So there's all of that's kind of, we're factoring that into this new iteration, which incidentally is currently being kickstarted. So that's kind of the book itself. The Dissident is not out yet. It's something that we plan to put out on May 1st on a dedicated website called The Dissident Daily. And we'll be releasing one page a day for free over a period of 336 days, because that's how large the graphic novel is.
Wow.
So right now we're kind of at the halfway mark of our Kickstarter. We've got 15 days to go, and you know, that's kind of what's going on.
If we do make the goal, then we'll be able to do a push goal, which would potentially allow us to raise a little more money to do the prequel that we may do as an animated
motion comic. And but the exciting thing about the interactivity aspect of it is that, you know, when we drew the book, you know, like I said, the internet was not a major factor. Now it's permeated our lives on so many levels, and in many ways it's kind of created this Orwellian reality, but it's also created an incredible amount of empowerment to communicate and get work out globally. And so what we've done is really embrace that technology in terms of the comic book projects, and especially the independent and personal projects that we do that are a little trickier to get financed by the main publishers. And so what we've decided to do with The Dissident is release it online. And once we did that, we realized, wow, there's an incredible opportunity here in that the book itself, since we were living in Amsterdam and drawing these very detailed scenes, we really wanted the science fiction story to still really be grounded and rooted in a place. There are very authentic scenes, like, you know, actual locations that are there to this day, that are the background and the environment in the comic book. And we realized, wow, you know, now we've got Google Maps, and we can literally hotlink from the comic book panels and pages right to the street view where this actual scene is unfolding. And so what we want to do is, as those pages come out and when we land in these different locations, we're going to hotlink all of the pages to these environments in Amsterdam. And so in a way, as you read The Dissident, it'll be kind of a quasi-underground tour of Amsterdam.
Well, if this does well enough, the Dutch Tourism Bureau might call you, do some Dissident tours.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Dissidents wanted.
You know, it sounds as if this this project, the story, has a little bit of a callback to your grandfather's day when he was doing underground art for alternative media press. And I do want to mention your family, because there's been just so much of what Portland culture is nowadays that goes back to your dad Hank. He designed theatrical sets for Penny Allen, the seminal Portland filmmaker here, who we've had on right, KBOO. Right, she right. now lives in France.
Yeah.
As I said, he's done a number of paintings that are here locally, and done more theatrical sets, done a whole great number of things. You're well known for a number of artworks that may or may not still exist. The late lamented Burbatti's Pan had a great sort of triptych mural,
right?
The nightclub back in the day.
Yeah. Burbatti's was the brothers, that they were amazing supporters of our work, especially when we were drawing and actually inking. We lived in San Francisco. We actually moved to San Francisco to ink Triple X, aka The Dissident, in like the early 90s. We were like, there's too many distractions in Portland. We've got to go somewhere where we don't know anybody. And so we basically were monks down there for a year, and we inked the 300 plus pages. But while we were there, the guys were... I think they bought one of our paintings.
Yeah, so kind of, you know, because it was pretty lean and mean time. So we were, you know, those guys definitely supported our creative, passion. And those paintings did live there for quite a while. And it's kind of going back to our roots, if you will, growing up here and kind of, you know, just basically you know that the community itself has really supported our father's work, and obviously in the theater world, the Storefront Theater of the sort of late 60s, early 70s, they really embraced our dad when he was kind of finding his way in America, and really provided a community for him to thrive in creatively. And you know, we were exposed to pretty amazing imagery at a pretty young age through the Storefront Theater. And then that sort of evolved, obviously, and he's done a lot of, you know, seminal works for the state, including Governor McCall's portrait that hangs in the state capitol.
Yes, indeed. If people go down to Salem, they'll see. Yeah. Actually, there's a couple of portraits he did in the State House, I believe.
Yeah, he did Kitzhaber as well.
Kitzhaber as well.
More recently. Those,
yeah, they're beautiful.
So, yeah, no, we are kind of our, in our, you know, we've, of course, done, you know, numerous nightclubs, paintings, and all over the city. You could do a tour of that, I guess.
Well, I think if people look at some of your stuff, they'll see a lot of, there's dark humor, there's ironic, yeah. You know, detachment and sort of a side eye towards the state and authority in general. And I'm wondering if some of that was inherited from your dad, who was basically bombed out as a kid during World War II. And you cover a lot of this in a documentary that you were you helped out on called Painted Life, where you went back and talked to a lot of your family members about your dad's upbringing.
Yeah, I that was done in the late 90s, early 2000s. I set out to do a film. I just wanted to basically document Hank painting a large-scale oil painting, because it's a kind of a rarefied process, and he's kind of got his whole approach. And that really started this whole larger film project, where we ultimately ended up going on some big road trips and then eventually back to Amsterdam, where I had the opportunity to interview his brothers and sisters and kind of link it into the relationship with their father. And it's true, there is a lot of, I think growing up, our dad was a really young kid during World War II, and although the small town that he lived in wasn't bombed, it was occupied by the Nazis. And I mean, I remember going to, both Arnold and I were there with our grandmother, and she was describing how these columns of Nazis literally marched past her front window. And I mean, it was like up to, you know, 4 feet away is the little road. And you're just thinking, good Lord, you know, this was a palpable thing in these people's lives. And it made it very real being there. And growing up with our dad, I think he's been processing that throughout his entire life. And he's done a whole series of war memory paintings. And so I think that caution about how terribly wrong things can go if the wrong people get control of the levers of power, you know, has definitely made us conscious of that. And I think that's certainly eked into our work more as a cautionary tale than a outright, you know, panic. But I think it is something that makes sense to be mindful of, and especially in a democracy, participate and be aware.
I think a number of comics readers, by the way, we're talking to the Panda Brothers here on Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. We're talking about their newest interactive comics adventure called The Dissident. But you guys have also worked in some mainstream comics forms. You've been nominated for an Eisner for some of your work with Grendel and Batman. But it seems like, you know, even those mainstream comics are kind of letting in a bit more of the zeitgeist more and more these
Definitely,
days.
Are
kind of letting in some of the subtext that the political subtext and the social subtext that you guys have been working on for many, many years now.
Yeah, I mean, indie comics really came in at a time when there was really a need for another voice that the sort of superhero genre wasn't really tapping at. And this, we're talking like back in the, you know, I think in the early 80s, you know, superhero comics just were getting a little stale, to be honest. And it really did create an opportunity for indie comics to kind of, you know, find their place. And there had been underground comics, and there's all these weird sort of, you know, labels you can put on it. But indie comics almost sort of that, you know, one definition of them might be kind of that hybrid of something that is more underground and a little more kind of counterculture and grounded in reality. But then there's this kind of high concept element that might come into play, or the sort of dynamics that one might expect from a comic book because of the sort of superhero genre that people grew up with and expect from, you know, when they pick up a Batman. But all of that sort of hybrid, if you will, that we were lucky enough to kind of sort of hit with a book called Grendel that did hit a nerve, and it kind of brought in, it had some of those dynamics because we grew up reading, you know, superhero comics, but we were interested in fashion.
And you probably also had some exposure to the original source material for Grendel, you know, being the Norse mythologies and the...
Well, I mean, we were basically, you know, at that time, you know, we were aware of the Beowulf myth and certainly John Gardner's adaptation, which is really what was the inspiration for Matt Wagner's interpretation of this sort of contemporary, you know, story of the beast, sort of from the perspective of the beast, as it were. And so we sort of...
A sympathetic portrayal, yeah.
Exactly. And so we sort of took that and ran with it. You know, we were given a lot of creative freedom, but, you know, at the time, of course, you know, MTV and... We were, you know, really interested in fashion and, you know, reading Interview magazine. And so it was just at a time when we were able to synthesize a lot of pop culture elements into something that you really hadn't really seen in comics that much yet.
And I mean, this was really like smack dab in,
this is
the,
mid-80s.
In the height of the 80s,
yeah.
You know, big shoulder pads and hair and like Art Deco and... had made a kind of visual comeback, and
yeah.
There was just a lot of like high, very dramatic
style. But also
style.
The return of noir was big back then.
Exactly.
Too. Yeah, deco. And mm-hmm. So we were sort of mining that, and we kind of, I think we were just very organically sort of transferring that into a comic book. And it hit a nerve, and it did sort of give us the ability to kind of suddenly have a voice in this medium, because that book was a big hit. And we went on from there, and really in kind of each story that we was brought to the table, we sort of tried to, you know, do it its own, created a vision for each book that was all its own. And you know, The Dissident really was at a point where we were becoming more politically aware. We were sort of becoming more, there was, you know, Gulf War I was heating up. We were actually living in an art co-op in downtown Portland for a period of time when we were writing the story, sort of between trips to Amsterdam, called Fuse. And then that really, all of this sort of environment that we were suddenly absorbing found its way into the tone of what would become XXX, but, you know, and is now sort of this reimagining of The Dissident in full color. So we're really bringing a story, you know, back. But what's also interesting, I should mention, kind of getting back to the previous question, is this sort of cautionary tale side, is that it's definitely echoing things that we're seeing in the political landscape right now. You know, the main sort of bad guy is a corporate leader who's, you know, looking
kind
to seize power.
Well,
but he's also got access to the corporate media. So your protagonist is certainly he's getting the worst sort of propaganda against him along the way.
Well, right. So all the mechanisms of power are there to you know,
discredit,
sort of, yeah, make
crush.
Him a target. So he's, you know, it's really about the little guy up against the juggernaut of the power structure. So it's that type of story.
Well, we've been talking about the interactive comics adventure, The Dissident. The minds behind the project are the Pander brothers, Jakob and Arnold Pander. It's been great to have you on Words and Pictures today.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I just want to quickly give a shout out to Ryan, Chrisman, Alana, and Ben, who contributed to our Kickstarter during the show here. So thanks you guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, and for our listeners who might be interested in your various art and film and comics projects, you know, coming up and already out there, how can they find out more?
Well, you can go to our Kickstarter's page and just put in The Dissident.
Yeah, The Dissident on Kickstarter. We've also got a lot of our digital comics available on our new imprint, FuseComics.com.
You can also see our media work at panderbros.com if you want to see some of the other kind
the
of
film.
Projects. Yeah, Subtext is also on Vimeo On Demand, our short film Subtext. You can check
wow,
out.
There's a couple of many long afternoons for people to spend
That's right.
with your project.
And you can follow us at PanderBros on Twitter and Instagram.
All right.
That's right.
Well, thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at wordsandpicture. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
now the KBOO News at noon for Thursday, February 11th, 2016. The armed occupation at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge has finally ended. This morning, after 41 days, the last four holdouts have surrendered. Those taken into custody by the FBI were David Fry of Cincinnati, Jeff Banta of Elko, Nevada, Sean Anderson and his wife Sandy of Riggins, Idaho. Each will be charged with a federal conspiracy charge for their role in the occupation. 12 others have already been arrested on the same charge. More on this story during the KBOO Evening News this afternoon at 5 p.m. It's getting harder to afford to live in the Portland metro. A study released by Metro, the elected regional government, said that rents have increased 63% since 2006. So if you paid $1,000 per month 9 years ago, the bill is now over $1,600 per month. Meanwhile, the income for renters only increased 39% during that same time. Average rents in the Portland metro are now over $1,800 per month. The housing challenge will increase as Metro expects another 400,000 residents by 2035. You can meet your local farmer at the second annual Portland CSA Share Fair. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. The Portland CSA Coalition works to help people find local farms and helps farmers create sustainable businesses. This year's fair will be held March 19th on Salmon Street in Portland and will feature 40 local farmers, ranchers, and fishers. In international news, the BBC has reported that a study of whales that were beached off the coast of Scotland over 3 years ago reveals that high levels of mercury were found in the mammals. These levels were high enough to cause